Advocates say tens of thousands of people in Illinois are at risk of going hungry thanks to changes in eligibility requirements for a federal food assistance program. The White House budget bill that passed Congress contained new work requirements for those who receive benefits through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. So-called able-bodied people have to either work or volunteer 4 hours a day to stay in the program. Those who don't meet the criteria could lose their benefits starting this month. I'm WBBM News Radio's Rob Hart. We talk about the changes in eligibility with Nolan Downey, the Senior Director of Policy for the Greater Chicago Food Depository. We discuss how the Food Depository is trying to fill the gap and what you can do if you think your benefits are at risk this week on At Issue.
What happened on May 1st and before that on April 1st to some SNAP recipients in Illinois?
Yeah, so this is now a result of the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill that folks might be familiar with that passed last July 4th. This is a part of the federal domestic policy agenda that slashed the safety net in ways that we have never seen. So cut food assistance like SNAP by $200 billion a year, cut healthcare programs like Medicaid by more than $1 trillion a year, and now we're finally starting to see the impact of that in the state. So just last week on May 1st, we had 120,000 people in Illinois lose critical nutrition assistance because of expanded work requirements that were passed as part of the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill. And that was just really the first big wave. As you mentioned, on April 1st, another change that happened was about 16,000 lawfully present humanitarian immigrants, people who have been eligible for federal benefits for decades. We're talking about asylees, victims of torture, victims of trafficking, people who have oftentimes braved harrowing circumstances to come to the country legally. Have now been denied benefits starting April 1st. So a multitude of changes that we're seeing to a critical program like the SNAP program that are now putting, as you put it, tens of thousands of people in the state in crisis.
And you were just in Springfield. What were you doing in the state capitol?
Yeah, so we are first and foremost doing everything we can at the federal level to reverse or mitigate the harm from some of those changes that I'm talking about. But at the state level, there's an opportunity for us to step up as well. And so part of what we're advocating for at the state level are some changes that will address both the short-term and long-term pain that we're feeling as a result of these changes to SNAP. The first part is those 120,000 people that lost benefits because of work requirements. We're advocating for a piece of proposed state legislation that would create what we're calling the FRESH program. This program would give those households a one-time payment of $600 a month that would be funded by the state to just transition them through this time where they're now going to be going without that critical nutrition assistance that they were getting previously. So that would be a significant investment for the state, but one that we think is well calibrated in this moment where we've got a lot of households that are going to be in deep trouble.
To walk us through the history of work requirements when it comes to SNAP assistance, because there have been times in which work requirements are in place. There have been other times in which work requirements have been waived. And just tell us a little bit about how the history of work requirements before this particular moment.
Sure. I mean, when you're talking about the history of work requirements, we have to actually go back quite a bit further, because work requirements really are grounded in historical and racist tropes that go all the way back to the slavery era, where these tropes were used to justify a system of bondage that then evolved into the outright exclusion of black families from early safety net programs like the Mother's Pension Program and other programs. We saw these same tropes present in things like black codes or vagrancy laws that criminalized, you know, people not having regular employment all the way up into the early 20th century, where you had the early versions of work requirements being imposed on mostly black families, really driving them back into work situations like going out and harvesting crops as a condition of continuing to receive meager benefits from the state. Then you carry that forward into the more modern era when we think about Ronald Reagan and the proliferation of this welfare queen falsehood, this stereotype, this myth that there are people out here that are free riding on federal benefits. I think the one thing that I like to try to remind folks is that SNAP benefits are only $198 on average per person. There is nobody out there that is turning down a good job or otherwise walking away from gainful employment because they're receiving these benefits. So any suggestion to that and is just a complete falsehood and totally divorced from our experience serving the folks that are on this program. But we see these tropes and stereotypes being used to degrade the social safety net, both in the 80s, which ultimately proliferated in welfare reform in 1996, and now currently, where these same tropes are being used to cut the social safety net once again.
At the moment, in the here and now, where is the fix? Does it happen on a legislative level, or does it happen in the courts?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of tactics that we have to employ. I mean, first and foremost, when we talk about how are we going to mitigate the harm of this, what people need to understand is, particularly with work requirements, there are many folks that should be exempt. And so what we really encourage people to do is go to abe.illinois.gov, hit the check if I meet the SNAP work requirements button, and see if you might qualify for an exemption from the work requirements or if you're even subject to them. That's the first piece. We need folks to understand that this is a change that is happening and to know what they need to do to take the steps to protect their benefits. But then we move to sort of the advocacy piece, because we're not going to be able to protect everyone. Not everyone is going to be exempt. We have been pushing for there to be more ways for people to meet the work requirement, and we're really thrilled that there are some new tools that are out there that people can use to help get to that 80 hours a month in SNAP that they need to hit to keep their benefits. So one of those is jobreadyillinois.com. That is something that people can go on if they have a email address and an active internet connection. They can use the programming on there, workforce development programming, to be able to meet the work requirement. Another is the Serve Illinois tool that people can use to find volunteering opportunities around them that could also be used to meet the work requirement. But then, as you said, another piece of this is the legislation. So as we said earlier on, we are advocating for some pieces of state legislation that we think can respond directly to these cuts by giving some people some emergency support in the near term.
Now, you point out in walking us through the history of food assistance programs, both on a state and federal level, is that it's politically popular at times to take a swing at them and position yourself as an elected official as someone who's going to do something about it and cut these programs and advocate for you, the taxpayer. And this has bipartisan appeal. I mean, you talk about Ronald Reagan, a Republican. Welfare reform was Bill Clinton, a Democrat. And at the same time, though, when SNAP recipients were in danger of losing their benefits during the government shutdown last fall, a lot of people did open their wallets and their hearts across the country, donating to food programs, donating to the Greater Chicago Food Depository, because they wanted to help out. So how do you square that particular circle where it's both an easy issue to inveigh against, while at the same time, a lot of voters are equally as generous?
Well, let's be very clear about one thing. This so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, it's important for us to, again, center in why these cuts happened. I mentioned it, $200 billion from SNAP, another $1 trillion from healthcare programs that were done to do two things. One was to increase funding for the cruel immigration enforcement that's terrorizing cities across the country, including ours, and here in Chicago. The second reason it was done was to offset the cost of tax breaks to some of the wealthiest individuals in this country. And I would posit to you that those two things are not popular. And we've seen some of the rejection of that in some of the groundswell that you're talking about, both people hitting the streets and getting out and being active, but also in donating to some local nonprofits like the Food Depository. And I want to make one thing clear. At the Food Depository, we are so grateful for all of our donors and being able to help us serve our neighbors with the emergency food that they need. But we cannot meet the need that is created by these cuts. As a food bank, for every one meal that we provide, SNAP provides 9. So we cannot operate on the same scale that the SNAP program does. It's part of why we are so involved in this advocacy, because ultimately our mission is to end hunger. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that people who come through to our pantry partners are leaving with the food that they need, but that is not going to end hunger. What's going to end hunger is a social safety net in a government that is being a guarantor of people's basic human rights.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart. We're talking with Nolan Downey, Senior Director of Policy at the Greater Chicago Food Depository. Now let's talk about what your daily experience is if A, if you're a SNAP recipient, and B, if you rely on food assistance from the Greater Chicago Food Depository. And I'm just talking about from an administrative standpoint, because if, according to the work requirements, you have to tell someone that you either have a part-time job or are volunteering. And I think we all have experience with dealing with websites, dealing with chatbots, dealing with the lack of availability of a human being to talk about your problems. So if you are enrolling in these programs, how easy or difficult is it for you to get the benefits to which you are required or entitled?
Yeah, so I think it goes back to some of our own preconceptions about benefits recipients, you know, that was part of the history that we talked about, because we often do make people jump through a ton of hoops to sort of demonstrate that they are deserving of this assistance, right? We believe that everybody should be able to meet their basic needs regardless of their circumstances. And while there is administrative burden on families, particularly with these new work requirements, I will give credit to our state and say that our state agency, the Department of Human Services here in Illinois, has done a lot that they can within federal guardrails to make it as easy as possible for people to figure out, do they need to worry about this? And if they do, what are the steps they need to take? And so you're right, it does involve, if I'm exempt, do I need to submit an exemption reform or an exemption form? That is something that we really recommend that people investigate. Also uplift that we at the Food Depository have a whole team, our neighbor services team, that is able to help people navigate these administrative burdens. So if you are someone that is listening and thinking, I really might need help figuring out what exactly I've got to do to stay connected to benefits, would encourage people to call our neighbor services line, 773-247-FOOD. That's 773-247-3663. We have a whole team of people, again, that can help people navigate some of those challenges. But I will say, I think the experience of folks in a lot of state is much worse because you have some other state governments that have not been as committed to implementing these harmful changes with as much compassion as our state has.
Of the people who are at the greatest risk of losing benefits, are we talking about people who may have a disability and are unable to fulfill the work requirement? Are we talking about someone who is just simply of advanced age? Are we talking about someone who has some other issue that is keeping them in which food assistance is necessary?
Yeah, so particularly with work requirements, the biggest changes that were made were now subjecting to the work requirement parents who have teenage children, children in their household that are older than age 14, or rather 14 and older, and also subjecting to the work requirement for the first time ever, adults between ages 55 and 64. So we are particularly concerned about those households who do have those teenage children, and also those older adult populations who now need to either demonstrate that they are exempt from the work requirement or demonstrate that they are meeting that 80-hour a month requirement. So those are a couple populations that we're very concerned about. Another one is folks who struggle with some type of disability. It might be a physical or mental limitation that impacts their ability to work 80 hours a month. If people receive disability benefits, they're automatically exempt from the work requirement. But that's a very high standard to receive disability benefits. There are many people who have other conditions or limitations that don't quite rise to that high level of receiving disability benefits, but nonetheless impact their ability to work. And so those are folks who could meet an exemption to the SNAP work requirements, and who we'd be interested in helping navigate the process, because that is another group of people who, without further action, might be impacted by these changes.
What is the state of need today, especially when it comes to food assistance? Because you may have people who are working 40 hours a week or 35 hours a week or 32 hours a week, but at the same time, we've all been to the grocery store, and at the same time, you're having a hard time keeping up with the increasing cost of groceries and having a hard time providing for your family. Where do you turn?
I mean, the need is staggering already. I mean, before we see the real impacts of these changes, you know, even before 120,000 people lost SNAP last week, the need was dire. I mean, in Cook County, we've got roughly 772,000 people who already cannot meet their basic needs. As you mentioned, the price of groceries is rising. From 2020 to 2025, the price of groceries went up about 21%. We're all feeling that. We're not just feeling it at the grocery stores, we're feeling it in our housing costs too. Rent is also skyrocketing. And so people's basic needs across the board are becoming harder to meet, and people in those circumstances have to make difficult choices. And so we see this all the time where people are spending money on food, they're falling behind on their rent, or vice versa. They're maxing out a credit card because they've got to pay for food. Now all of a sudden they're dealing with that debt. So it's very easy in this environment for people who are in economically precarious circumstances to really spiral. And so, you know, I think that's why some of these interventions that we're talking about at the state level would provide desperately needed support for people who are struggling even more than before.
Let's talk about the aid component, because we did touch on the great deal of giving that took place, either financial or otherwise, during the government shutdown last fall. Was that sustainable? Did that continue after the shutdown ended?
Well, it's not sustainable. And during the government shutdown, where SNAP was disrupted for the first time in program history, we had benefits actually delayed in November. And it was delayed for only about 2 weeks. But even in that period, that slight delay was incredibly impactful for families. And in the 30 days surrounding that delay at the food depository, we served more families than we've ever served in the almost 60-year history of our organization. And so, just as we've done always, we try to respond to those moments of heightened need. But if that were to be the new norm, we could not sustain that. And it is not an issue of funding. It's an issue of infrastructure. I mean, as much as we are doing to provide food and get food out to our 850 pantry partners across the city, it isn't the most efficient way to get people the food that they need. SNAP as a tool is far more efficient. You give people the resources they need to go to the grocery store and buy the food rather than us rescuing it or purchasing it or having it donated, having it to get it out through our warehouse system. So it just is not sustainable for the emergency food system to be able to respond to the level of need that we're going to see because of these changes.
Speaking of sustainability, and when the food depository has been on the program before, they've talked about just the power of that $1, what it can do in terms of meeting people's needs. For the individual going to the grocery store, they're experiencing sticker shock. How is that making life more difficult for the food depository to actually get the food that they use to serve people?
I mean, we are having to spend slightly more money. You know, when the food that comes through our doors, about 30% of it is USDA commodities that we get through the Emergency Food Assistance Program. So some of that food we get from the federal government. About 42% of the food is food that we rescue. So, you know, we are working with retail partners to make sure that food isn't going to waste and we can move it out through the emergency food system. But then the rest of it is food that we purchase. And so we are seeing, I think, some impacts through that purchasing, but not to the extent that it's disrupting our operations. So I think in this moment, we're far less concerned about the impacts to, sort of our financial circumstances, the food depository. We're far more concerned about the financial circumstances of our neighbors and them being able to meet their needs.
And then you mentioned, I think we talked a little bit about just on the political side of things, how it can be an uphill climb to make this argument and advocate for people in need. And how has the conversation changed, or has the conversation changed in Illinois? And where there's definitely like a political difference as you go across the state. All the Democrats, all the liberals are in Northern Illinois, and then Southern Illinois is much more rural and a lot more conservative. But need doesn't really know or care how you voted. And, you know, what kind of reception do you get when you go to Springfield and also talk to downstate lawmakers?
Well, I think you're right that, I mean, need is evident regardless of the characteristics of your community across the state. We are seeing need not only here in Cook County, but you know, need is even heightened in some places in the more rural communities in the state. You know, I will say that across the political spectrum, I think what people are really feeling in this moment is that they're fed up. I mean, people are paying too much for groceries, they're paying too much for housing, they're paying too much for gas, they're paying too much to live. And so I think that people are fed up and they are ready for change. And so one of the things that we like to say is that because of these federal changes to the social safety net, I really think we are going to be defined for a generation by how we respond in this moment. And so while the federal government has sort of imposed these changes upon us, Illinois as a state did not ask for this, I do think there is a real moment for us at the state level to rise to the occasion. And there may be some investments that we can make at a state level to make sure that people continue to meet their basic needs and can weather this storm until the political winds shift.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. We are talking with Nolan Downey, Senior Director of Policy at the Greater Chicago Food Depository. You touched on a couple of things that people can do to make to see if they're eligible for the work requirements, to also to make sure that their benefits do continue. But let's run down the list of resources that are available to people who may be in the program, may not know if they are still eligible, and if they aren't, what they could possibly do to change that circumstance.
Yeah, the first thing people need to do is figure out if they are exempt from the work requirements. And so again, people can go on ABE, that's abe.illinois.gov. There is a screening tool that people can access there if they click a button that says, check if I meet the SNAP work requirements. And that screening tool will help them figure out if they could qualify for an exemption from the work requirements or if it's something that they even need to worry about at all. That's really the first step. And that's a step that people can take even if they've already lost benefits. I mean, again, we've got 120,000 people in the state last week who lost their benefits. But if you should have been exempt the whole time, you can get back on benefits. And so really need people to explore whether them getting kicked off from the program was a mistake or if they should have been exempt. And again, we can help you at the food depository. So please call our neighbor services number, 773-247-3663. But we know not everybody is going to be exempt. And so for people who do not qualify for an exemption, the next step is, well, can I start meeting the work requirement? How can I comply with it? And I did mention some tools that are available to people to help them get to their 80 hours a month that they would have to get to continue receiving SNAP.
It sounds like there are resource hubs that can put you in touch not only with someone who can provide the part-time job, but also volunteer opportunities across the Chicago area.
Yeah, that's right. And so jobillinois.com is one great place for people looking to do activities that could help them meet the work requirement. People can meet it through volunteering. So Serve Illinois, if you just Google Serve Illinois, there's a great tool there that can help people find volunteer opportunities near them. But I would also encourage folks to get involved in advocacy as well. I mean, I mentioned some of the things that we're doing at the state level to try to secure some emergency assistance for people who are struggling. And our coalition, the Save Our SNAP Coalition, is a coalition of over 85 organizations across the state who are working hard to make sure that people have what they need to survive. But the SaveOurSNAP.org website is another place where people can find resources, not only about the information of the changes, but also how they can get involved to really stand up for themselves and their neighbors.
And then when we talk about, speaking of administrative burdens, we were talking a few minutes ago about signing up via the website and trying to navigate all the hoops of modern customer service. But it also implies that you have an internet connection. It also implies you have a phone that allows you to connect to the internet to find these resources. And it also implies that if you're trying to get a job to meet the work requirements, that you have transportation to get to that job. And in this day and age, for a lot of people, we take internet connectivity and literal transportation connectivity for granted. And for a lot of people who could be affected by these changes, that's not a given.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, a lot of these go back to what are some of the root causes of hunger. I mean, we know that inadequate transportation is certainly one. We know that not having access to gainful employment is absolutely one. I would say that for people who need to find an internet connection, you know, we have great partners at the Chicago Library System here in Chicago. People can go to the library and get an internet connection there, but it doesn't solve for transportation issues, which we know that so many people across the city are feeling. And so I think, you know, it's not an easy fix. I mean, we know there have been investments in our transportation system here in the state, but I think it gets back to some of the pernicious nature of these work requirements that we know that they're difficult to navigate, and then people have a lot of challenges to do what they would need to do to stay connected to the program. And I think it just centers, again, the fact that these work requirements are not really about helping people get gainful employment. What they're really about is putting hurdles in front of people to get them off of the program.
You talk about advocacy, and I go back to last fall when people were extraordinarily generous with the food depository to help people who may have been cut off from their SNAP benefits due to the government shutdown, and also people who organized food drives, organized fundraising drives, showed up at food drives and fundraising drives. How do you turn people who were so moved by the plight of people in need to either give financially or give of their time or donate food themselves? How do you turn those people into advocates?
Yeah, I think for the first thing we can do is provide a platform that makes it easy for people to lift their voices. And that's where SaveOurSNAP.org is one of those places where people can get involved and get updates when there are opportunities to take those steps, whether that's emailing their member of the General Assembly, whether that's getting involved in a phone bank with our coalition, whether that's coming with us down to Springfield. We just returned from Springfield yesterday, and we had about 50 people who got involved through the coalition to go down and advocate in front of the General Assembly to say that there are some supports that we need at the state level now to make sure that people can continue to eat. And so I definitely don't want to discourage folks from continuing to do everything that they can to step up for their neighbors, but want to continue to be clear that the emergency food system is not built to meet this need. We can't do it. And so what we really need is advocacy so that we can secure the partnership of government to help step in and give people some emergency assistance in this moment of crisis.
And then lastly, Nolan, let's just say you have been given the power to fix this problem, not only structurally, but economically. What would that fix look like?
Oh, don't tempt me with that level of power. I mean, I think that what we really need at the end of the day and the horizon that we should all be pushing toward is just a dramatically reimagined and compassionate social safety net. One that is interested in meeting people's basic needs and not making them demonstrate that they are deserving, right? Again, in this country, it is not a matter of scarcity. We have immense food abundance. We have immense wealth abundance. What we lack, decidedly, is equitable distribution of those things. And so I think ultimately our federal government, our state government needs to be a force in ensuring that those resources are distributed equitably so that everybody can meet their basic needs. And that is within our grasp. What we really just need is for folks to continue to lift their voice and express that what we're seeing now, cuts to the social safety net, is not acceptable. And that there is a different vision.
Nolan Downey, Senior Director of Policy for the Greater Chicago Food Depository, thank you for joining us on At Issue. If you want to hear the program again, you can do so at WBBMNewsRadio.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Odyssey app. Join us next week for another edition of At Issue. Until then, I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.